Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Boston Hockey Pod. I'm Sarah Kirkpatrick, and I'm here with
Andrew Bataferano
and Judy Cohen.
And we are just about less than 24 hours removed from our flight back from South Bend this weekend. Had quite the weekend, pretty good time, great campus, great rink, pretty good hockey games, too. First night went a lot better if you're a BU fan. And everybody kind of came into Saturday's game being like, okay, wow, BU could, like, finish in top three. Like, this is pretty great. And then Lowell won kind of back on this coast, and which means BU needed one more point in order to secure
one more
point to secure top
goal.
Four.
One goal. Goal to force
one
overtime.
Goal. One goal. Because they were, when that game went, the Lowell game went final, BU was only down 1-0. And they couldn't do it. They couldn't pull it off. So we went from being like, okay, BU could get top three and like home ice, first round bye, and then nope, fifth place, which is kind of a weird emotional wave to ride. But I don't know, this weekend was just kind of a weird set of games because they were close games, but they weren't necessarily like, I don't know what I'm trying to get at here, but what you guys think of the games?
I mean, you just look at the shot totals, it's like, oh, you'd think BU would have lost the first game, won the second game, but kind of the opposite happened. Sean McGuire had a great weekend in both games. We'll get a little bit to that a little later.
A lot of Sean McGuire feelings.
Yeah, it was just kind of an odd weekend, I thought. I didn't think they played terribly bad, but at the same time, I don't think they played great. They had, at times, they looked okay. But at times,
there was the power play.
At times, yeah, at times they just looked horribly, aka on the power play, especially in the second game when think I saw two of the worst power play attempts I've seen that they've had. And I know people were talking about, oh, there's been a lot of those the last 5 years. A couple people said that on the live blog over the weekend. But that, those were some, the first one especially, I don't even think they had the puck in the zone for more than 10 seconds. It was brutal. But, I mean, you can't be mad with at least getting one win, although you probably, if you're a BU fan, you're probably disappointed that you don't get the third seed and the first round bye, but it could be worse. They could be towards the bottom of the standings and not getting that home ice in the first round. I mean, I guess you could take solace in that they are fifth. They are the best of the teams that are forced to play that first weekend of hockey.
And they get the worst team.
Which we will get to a little later as well.
I thought they played really well Friday.
They looked like an actual, I think, complete team, like more top to bottom than they have been in the past. Like we saw the fourth line stepping up, Robbie came back, so that bumped Mike Moran back down, which we've talked about a lot, but that was huge, I think, in terms of balancing. But as I pointed out to Judy on Saturday night, didn't matter from a hockey standing standpoint because they still got fifth. But big in the pairwise, and I think especially now, pairwise is kind of in a weird spot because I don't even know what BU is.
It's tied for ninth with Notre Dame, actually, in like an eighth, ninth type of tie, right behind Yale, which is interesting, kind of.
So, like,
not too much changed.
Yeah. So they're, like, pretty set, but still not fully set.
Yeah, you can't lose the first round weekend, especially because that's, like, you're playing a really bad team. So that would not be good for pairwise. So you gotta really win that and kind of ensure it. Because, I mean, Providence was knocked out pretty early last year in the hockey's tournament, and they still obviously made the tournament.
Just barely.
Barely, but they still made it. So you don't wanna lose early and kind of hope that teams kind of lose in front of you. So they're in a good spot right now to make the tournament, but, you know, crazier things have happened.
But in terms of just the implications of being in fifth place, this is something we talked about a lot this weekend too, among the three of us, is just how it shouldn't have come down to Saturday night. I realize, like, see, you can pick it apart as much as you want, and you can look at every point in this, every time in the season where they should have won, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but at the end of the day, there were games looking at UNH.
Vermont.
Merrimack,
UConn
at UConn. There's so many moments in the season where BU should have won. And we're in a great position. Like, look at UNH, the UNH game at UNH. They
up by a goal with 2.5 minutes left and you give a goal like 35 seconds later, so.
And I don't want to point to anything in particular as being like the moment where they lost everything. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, like we were saying, fifth place isn't bad, but I do think having to play next weekend is pretty rough. I think the bye would have helped them a little bit. Obviously, home ice would have been great, and having to go up to Lowell, knocking on wood, assuming BU can pull off the series win over UMass. Lowell's not an easy place to play.
I'm actually going to take the opposite view here. I actually don't think it's the worst thing in the world to play the first round. It would be good to have the bye and the rest, you don't know how guys are doing physically, and it's a mental grind too. It's a long season.
Mm-hmm.
But you are playing, now we'll get into it, BU will be playing number 12, UMass Amherst, in the first round. So in Hockey East, and BU has basically, I don't want to put it, I'm just going to put it bluntly, they've manhandled them the last two seasons. None of the games have really been close.
The one at UMass this year was a little closer for comfort than.
And I never really thought they were like.
I never felt like
in control of it. It got close, but it was kind of like, eh, they'll.
And anything, I mean, I think UMass is in a position where they don't have anything to lose, and so they could just go out there.
They physically can't, because they can't get any lower than they are.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that UMass could just go out there and be like, why not shake things up? Why not mess with the pairwise? Why not see how hard we can play? And
they could have done that all season. Yeah, the hardest they've played still allowed BU to score 13 goals. They've
played terribly against the top teams this season.
I'm just hesitant to look at this weekend as like a surefire.
No one's
like
looking at it as a surefire.
It should be.
I think a lot of people are. I think a lot of fans are.
They have terrible goalies and their defense is terrible.
And they can score a bit.
What has happened at least twice in the past 2 years is that the game starts out kind of close, like excluding the most recent game because they scored 3 goals in 5 minutes.
Right.
But it starts out close and then BU runs away with it. That's what happened to Adaganis when UMass scored first, and then all of a sudden it's like Matt Grzelcyk has a natural hat trick.
And then that 9-6 game or 9-5, whatever it was.
Lecouvé in
that. Yeah, so that was something. And also, but back to the point about, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world, because potentially if they did get the bye, hypothetically, say BU was the fourth or third seed or whatever, they would have played probably Northeastern.
Yeah.
And Northeastern is right now one of the hottest, if not the hottest team in all of college hockey, definitely in Hockey East.
They gave BU, they gave him a game in the Beanpot semis. BU still won, but they, it was
much different team than they were in October, November.
Right.
And now they're playing.
Exactly.
I mean, we see this a lot from Northeastern. Crappy start, kind of get hot into the Beanpot, but then usually fall off after the Beanpot, and they really haven't.
Yeah, and they haven't yet.
Kevin Waugh is finally starting to play like he.
Isn't BU the only team to have beaten Northeastern in, like, the past, like, 17 games or something like that? Like, they've won, like, 16 of their past 17, and the one loss would have been to BU.
Yeah.
So I think BU matches up against Northeastern well, but...
Again, the nothing-to-lose type of situation, especially since Northeastern is very... Northeastern's actually kind of on the fringe on the pairwise right now, and who knows
they
what...
Are.
They could somehow sneak in if they have a nice little run here. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be a little surprised, but not totally shocked. So that's not the team I'd probably want to play after having a week off, a team that's coming in kind of red hot. Because if anything can happen, you would think they would beat Maine, because Northeastern just played Maine this past weekend and kind of ran over them. It wasn't really close, especially in that second game. So I think, maybe playing UMass isn't the worst thing in the world. You go in and you think you would win, and kind of like a confidence booster, like, all right, we can do this. And then you play, yes, it is a tough team in Lowell, but it's not like they haven't beaten them. They beat them once this year, though it is a little tougher to do it on the road.
I guess I don't want to say fear, I don't know the right word, is that, I guess, like, not to psychoanalyze, but like mentally, psychologically, this team... No, I'm sure they are fully aware that they could have easily been top four, and they aren't. So my concern is that I don't think they'll necessarily do this, but I think there is still the possibility that they're kind of hanging their heads and being like, we should have been top four, and like, why are we playing this game? And I'm worried that they could potentially let that kind of like, why do we have to play this weekend mentality get to them this weekend, and that could lead to a lot of flaws, I think.
But I think that, like, they have to play this weekend if they want to play the next weekend. And I think they're going to approach it the same way they've approached the other UMass games. I mean, they played this team before. This team was just as bad before. And they still came out. And they didn't win, like, you know, like, oh, like 4-3 win. Like, it was like a 7-2 win, a 6-3 win. Like, they still, like, turned the offense on. So I think that is a legitimate concern. But I think they are going to realize that, like, if they want to keep playing hockey, they have to play like they want to keep playing hockey.
Mm-hmm. And also to the point about, you know, them kind of being like, oh, we could have been a top four team and they could be hanging in their heads. Maybe they're like, okay, we're a top four team. We know we can play better. We're more motivated to win now.
Yeah.
And we should be playing better because we talked about it. Like, they lost games that they could have won where this weekend wouldn't have really mattered as much. Vermont and UNH being the two that really stick out.
Mm-hmm.
But they've played well against teams that are in the national contention. You beat Quinnipiac, you tied Cornell, you tied BC, you
tied Providence.
You lost to Yale by one at Yale, which is a tough place to play.
Yeah.
Tied Providence twice.
Yeah.
So, like, you've played well against some of these top schools, and yeah, maybe they're kind of bummed that they're not the top four in Hockey East, and they'll have to play this game, but I think you can use it as motivation, be like, all right, let's finally show people that we're that good, and especially since it's that time of the year where it really matters now because every loss is huge, especially when if they do make the NCAA tournament, you only get one loss and then you're out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could look at it either way, from the negative standpoint where they're kind of down or where they'll kind of use it as motivation. Because they've had games where they play better than they probably should have.
I guess my thing is they need urgency. They need to be...
Mm-hmm.
I think there have been moments this season where they have shown urgency, and they, like Quinnipiac, there have been games when they've gone out and been like, yes, we're a great team. We know we can beat these guys. And they have. But then that urgency just seems to go away, or they're just kind of like, I can't pick out the proper words today, but lackadaisical, or just kind of like they'll come back and not have that urgency or that sense of like that not winning attitude. I don't know, but I just...
That's what the second game at Notre Dame felt like. It felt like after they beat them the first time, it was like, okay.
It was like, oh, we already beat them. Like, we know we can beat them. We can beat them again, but they didn't actually show any sort of sense of needing to shoot. And that's the thing is, like, we talk about Cal Peterson. Cal had a good game, but I never felt like he was...
Super challenged. Taking shots from, like, the points and, like, hoping for them to go in. And it's
a lot of block shots,
too. Front of the net.
Yeah. I'm not saying Cal's not a good goalie, there was only one save in that game where I was like, oh, wow, that was a legitimate scoring chance. And that was a Daniel Regan in the last 5 minutes. So
a couple other good ones, but that was definitely the...
That was the only point in the game where I was like, oh, wow, they could have actually scored there, you know? And
I think there was that one that Adi had early in the game where he kind of picked the corner and he made a really nice ball stop. And it flipped right over the net.
Yeah, I thought it was going in.
Bobo almost tipped it in, but it would have been a high stick, so he didn't touch it. But
smart hockey.
I think it comes down to not relying on the third period, and we haven't really talked about that lately. It seems like something we had talked about earlier in the year and a lot last year, even though we didn't have the podcast last year, but we talked a lot about our articles and it kind of got old.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have that breakaway player now that's going to take the game over for you. So you need to really play a complete game with all of your lines throughout all 60 minutes. You can't play 40 minutes. You can't play 20 minutes. You have to really play 60.
Because they can't get away with it this year.
No, you can't.
They can't get away with it.
I don't know if it's as much, I mean, at least to me in the past couple weeks, if it's as much relying on the third period as it is just like
not actually.
No, it's just like not trying for like a couple minutes and then it coming back to bite them.
Yeah, being lackadaisical. Mm-hmm.
Like the lapses. Quinn was
right, going
about.
Up 2-0 at UNH and then giving up a goal where the guy's standing at the blue line and he's wide open. He walks in on Lecuve.
Right.
Like plays like that.
Yeah, so it's like I think it came down to the third period this week, like on Saturday, but I wouldn't say that it's not like last year where they're relying on the third period.
I would agree.
I just think that but the issue of playing the full 60, like, it's the issue. It's just when the lapse
is. It's just kind of coming at different parts
different
of the game.
Yeah.
It could be in the third period. It could be
in
the first period.
In the second period, you know. Like,
and it just seems... And like Quinn was talking about it, like, inept is such a great word to use on like how that power play looked, because they just could not do anything.
I just don't get
didn't set up, couldn't enter properly, turning it over, shorthanded chances for the other team. It was just all over the place.
It's just, like, really, like, not smart decisions.
Yeah, and that's what's frustrating is these are good players. Like, yeah. We know they're good players. We've seen them be good players before, but they just don't. Especially this weekend, I was just kind of like, what are you doing? Like,
I feel like they, like, feel they have to remind everyone that they're good. So
they spend too, like, much time
do
trying
really
to
fancy things instead of just moving
like
the puck.
Let's make five drops. Let's make
pass the puck quickly, shoot the puck at the net.
Let's make five drop passes in the neutral zone before we set it up for Adi to one-time it.
Get in there.
But
first,
they couldn't even set him up for one-timing
like
it. So
you have Adi on your power play. Like,
Adi Ovechkin over there one-timing from the top of the circle. But, it's just maybe, I don't know if it's personnel that's the issue or just, it just was a bad weekend. But, I mean, I don't think a shakeup would be the worst thing in the world on the power play. Give guys different chances in different spots to see if it can be more effective with that. Because clearly it's not working with the guys that they've been using, or at least I don't think it is.
Well, the thing is that, like, when that power play is on, the personnel is perfect for it. Like,
right.
Those units are perfect. But when they do this, and I feel like maybe it's just a mental thing then, because we've seen them execute before.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know, like, you can shake it up, but I think that this power play has worked in the past. Maybe you could switch the D out,
I'm not saying make major
keep the
changes.
Forward groups together, and, like, I think it's just, they looked so bad.
It's, I mean, it does come down to the guys at the point making, quarterbacking the plays. I'm not saying to make wholesale changes. But I
good
think
word.
So, thank you. I don't think Costco get
Costco
those
changes.
Get those free
get those samples.
Get those free samples, the little mini hot dogs. Those are the best. I don't know. But I don't think you need to change up your whole power play, because I really do think those, like, that the group of forwards, at least at first, like, you set it up for Adi to try and get that one-timer, or someone to get that one-timer.
Or for Adi to feed Danny at the post, and it works.
And it one of those plays usually works. You want those two guys on the wings on the power play, but maybe it's time to change, like Judy said, who's at the points kind of feeding them down low.
But who?
That's the issue.
I mean, you could even, I don't know.
I don't think you're not taking Grzelcyk off. He's essentially your best player.
Grzelcyk isn't the problem.
No, he's not.
Maybe it's just the combos. I don't know. Maybe I would switch up the combos.
Yeah, maybe put the pairs differently.
Yeah.
But again, who is my... That's what I can't...
I feel like I have seen it kind of differently here and there.
Yeah, but yeah.
But it's not been... It's kind of been sporadic. But
as it's
just like...
Fortunato.
Maybe like a Grzelcyk with a hickey or something like that. You know, change it to that. Maybe move McAvoy in the second unit with someone else.
What I'm saying.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't think you need to change your entire forward group. It's just,
no.
But you need to have it running smoothly at this time of year. You got to take advantage of the opportunity when you have an extra guy out there, especially since goals always seem to come at a premium, because some goalie's playing out of his mind in the playoffs. And so your best chance is going to be when you're not at 5-on-5, probably when you're on a 5-on-4 or 5-on-3.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of goalies,
I think Judy has a lot to talk about, but we'll start out.
So Mike Richter Award, was it like top 30? Like, I don't even know the nominees, but they're like 45 of them.
I don't know how many it is. They're like 25, 26.
This will be the third year that they're giving the award.
26 nominees.
26 nominees.
Which is a very weird number.
Is
it normally 20?
I'd have to look, but
I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's pretty.
But anyway,
either way,
regardless, pick out. So there's some good people on there, like Alex Lyon,
Thatcher Demko.
So why don't you read through the Judy for us? Why don't you read through the Hockey East nominees?
Okay. Here are your Hockey East Mike Richter Award nominees: Kevin Boyle of UMass Lowell. Thatcher Demko of Boston College. Nick Ellis of Providence. Who's next here?
All good goalies so far.
Oh, Packy Munson of Vermont. Ryan Ruck of Northeastern. Someone seems to be missing.
Sean McGuire is not on said list. I don't disagree with any of those top three that you mentioned, Boyle, Demko, or Ellis. They're very, very good goalies, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Thatcher Demko take that award. He's been really good this year, and we saw it against
Alex Lyon. Almost get it. Like, there are a lot of good goalies, and, like, I get that they're trying to just kind of
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Rob Nichols from UConn is also on.
Okay. Oh, Rob Nichols on UConn.
And Cal. Obviously, Cal's on.
Oh, Cal Peterson. Yeah. So we got a lot. Like eight, that's like half of hockey East there.
Hockey East goalies.
But the point that I think Judy will probably also agree with here, if you were to talk about, like, okay, maybe McGuire isn't there because he doesn't have the games played that some of the other goaltenders have, but Packy Munson has, I think, one fewer game played than Sean McGuire does, and I think Sean, over the last month, has been one of the best goalies in all of college hockey.
It's just went from
weird.
Packy Munson, we were just like, what a great name. That's a fantastic name.
Didn't play at all the first half of the season.
We were just like, haha, that's a funny name. And now we're like literally talking about
it. It's like, oh, bye Mike Santaguita, time for Packy Munson.
That happened in the BU game, right? Like, that was when the switch happened, wasn't it?
I don't know if they put in Munson that game. It might have been, because I think they have three goalies.
Oh, I don't remember.
But like,
that was the game where it switched.
But like,
My issue is that, like, first of all, right now, McGuire has a .928 save percentage, which, like, by itself, if that was a season-long save percentage,
great
that
number.
Would be a great year, right?
Mm-hmm.
But,
I think so.
But he's posted that number after being not so great for the first two
in
months
the
of the season.
Like,
and he, like, has allowed, well, we did the stat, he's mm-hmm. allowed more than three goals twice in the past 3 months
yeah,
in the game.
Yeah,
it's,
Lowell,
like, insane.
And, I know he gave up three at
like,
Amherst.
I'm just like, is there some criteria that he doesn't fill? Like, there's literally, I cannot think of.
I can only think the
list.
Games played, but I don't know why that.
It
argument.
Doesn't even matter. The minutes that are listed, he's played just as many minutes.
I, yeah,
as all
I don't
these guys.
Get it. I can see kind of Rob Nichols there, and I can kind of understand it. What's his save percentage, Nichols? Do you know?
Yeah, it's here. It's right here. No, it's like.
I know it's not
it's
probably
909.
And it's not great. But I feel like UConn does rely on him a lot, and they did especially last year. So I can kind of understand him being there. And I know Packy Munson's put up some good numbers, but man, like, it's really weird just
to have that many goalies in Hockey East.
And probably not have the fourth. I don't know if he's the fourth best, but I would put him in that top four with Boyle,
with how he's playing
and
now,
Ellis
definitely.
And McGuire somewhere in a mix
he
of four
he's
there.
Fourth.
No, I would put him, so, like, I don't, like, just my personal rankings. Oh. I would, like, those would be my
Andrew Power rankings of hockey.
Or maybe Cal. I'll put Cal in there, too. Top five. There we go.
Yeah. But that would be the top five, I would think.
And then there's some other goalies from other conferences that I know you were looking at, Judy, that
well, yeah, I
you
mean,
were kind of surprised to see.
The goalie from Holy Cross is on there, which makes sense because they were on the bubble to pairwise for a while. But the goalie from, maybe I just don't know enough, from Alaska Anchorage is on here. And
Racine.
Steve Racine's on there.
And I know
whose team wins because they score six goals a game.
And you have the best first line in college
right,
hockey
like,
right
no
now.
No offense.
And it may be the Hobie Baker winner in Kyle Connor. And I remember Jason Rubenstein from Michigan.
Our pal,
hey buddy, was talking early in the year. He's like, man, like this team can score, but the goaltending is just like not
yeah.
great. Like Racine is just like.
But he's on he's on the nominee
but
list.
But here he is. He's up for the top goalie. Not that he'll probably win. But
no, Thatcher's going to win. But it's like, fine. Like.
He deserves to. Dodger Demko deserves to win if he wins.
Yeah.
Or Cam Johnson. But either way, like, both of them are on there, and both of them deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like.
You can't split the award,
if
right?
If you're going to have 26 nominees.
Of, like. How many Division I teams are there? I always forget. Like,
50?
59?
60?
60.
60,
yeah.
But, like.
No, but it's just.
Why don't you include 30 for
I'm
like
just,
if you're gonna do that?
Well, I just don't understand
point.
Why if you're gonna have like some random number anyway, unless there is some meaning behind it that I really don't know. But I don't.
Then the
think there
Mike
is.
Richter committee
would,
can let us know,
right? Or like then why wouldn't you put McGuire on the nominee list? He doesn't have to win, but like he's posted the numbers that deserve a nomination.
See, I would love to be there when they do the award, when they hand it out, and ask them what was the criteria behind the
yeah. Wait,
the
I'm gonna
final
look
list.
This up. Hold on, keep talking.
Yeah,
but,
I'm gonna look this up.
I mean, if you're going to talk about, like, you know, how Nichols has been relied on, and that's why UConn has stayed in some games. And they
played
her. Sean McGuire
Sean
is playing.
McGuire.
No offense, Beanpot yeah. final.
So much.
It's like he won the Beanpot
it's
MVP
alarming.
On the losing team. Like, that just shows you how.
That's when you know.
And I would say the first game against Notre Dame this weekend, especially in the third period, he did make the questionable shot towards the net, which he iced it, set up kind of. Notre Dame's goal that put it within one.
I'm not holding him.
But for the large part, he made some terrific saves that game and throughout the entire second half of the year. So I don't know if BU's like relied on him.
Yeah, Sean McGuire's top 15 in
fully.
The country in save percentage.
No offense.
No offense.
Well, that's our gripe with the award.
Okay, maybe I'm not looking in the right place. I don't see any other criteria besides to the most outstanding goaltender in NCAA men's hockey.
So, not that we're saying he would win it if he was actually in the final nomination.
Steve Racine is 50th in goals against.
No offense.
Not that goals against is the be-all, end-all, but...
No, but at the same time...
Not good.
Even Sean Maguire's 21st in goals against, which
is, like, all right.
Ahead of Ryan Rook.
Oh, here
Packy
we go.
Munson.
Candidates must display outstanding skills on the ice.
Okay.
Candidates should be in good academic standing at an NCAA college or university.
Well, he's playing, so...
He's playing, so he's good, and I would assume... I can't speak for anybody on that.
No one knows about
grades.
Consideration should be given to academic achievement and sportsmanship. Candidates must comply with all NCAA rules, be full-time students at an NCAA college or university, and complete 50% or more of the season, which he has at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now he has.
Consideration should be given to candidates' activities in the community.
Okay. But they all, everyone on BU.
Either way.
Maybe Packy Munson donated along or something.
Oh, yeah.
Got nominated.
Oh, wow.
I don't know.
Anyway.
But, I mean, we could go on all day about it, but we just think that he deserved to be up there.
At least, like, talked about.
Yeah, I mean, not that I would say he'd win, but he should at least be... I mean, if you're going to have that many goalies, he should be up there.
The Mike Richter Award is advertised as, like, the top goalie.
Yeah.
Not the top goalie who also happens to be
the
guy.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like,
it's not like we're saying Sean Maguire's a bad dude. Like, Sean Maguire's a good guy.
It's like, wow, like, you have to, like, go to some other country and... give some, like, community service time. I mean, I'm sure that's not obviously the big thing, but...
Yeah, but... It's
clearly, it's mentioned in the criteria that...
Yeah, but...
Being, like, an upstanding
citizen.
It's also
mentioned in the Hobie and Patty Kaz.
Yeah, so, but again, those are kind of universal.
You think of those as MVPs.
Best player, exactly.
And I just don't get why... I don't even know if I'd put Sean Maguire, like, top 10, but he is... If you're going to do it... We've said this 20 times. If you're going to do a top 26 or top 30... Top 25,
he
top
should be
20,
there.
He should be in there.
My point
no question.
Is,
our point
he should
is,
be on this list.
He should be on this list.
We could go on all day about
we
it.
Just don't get it, but...
It's fine.
It's fine.
Sort of.
But,
well, I guess, segue...
In the interest of fairness.
Yeah, there's nothing really much else to say. I think we've gone on all day about
we've
it.
We've exhausted our Sean Maguire complaints, or I guess Mike Richter Award Committee complaints. But anyway, Sean Maguire will be in action this weekend.
Against
UMass, and so will we. We will be at Aganis this weekend.
I will only be at one of the games.
Yeah, spring break, unfortunately.
Did not expect BU playing in the first round, making plans, but...
Murphy's Law.
Oh, yes. Wow. But I'll be there for if BU makes the second round, all three games, so no worry.
Yeah, we'll be at full strength this weekend. We'll have a friend help us out, so we'll have all your coverage this weekend from Aganis Arena, and you can follow our live blog, as always, at hockey.dailyprogress.com, and we will see you guys Friday. Take care.